This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Let's roll, baby. Welcome in a Sunday edition of the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. Josh Ostrensky, Will Hill, spending a Sunday with you for the next 3 hours. Yes, we have a full Sunday card in Major League Baseball, which we will get to. Will Hill, right out of the gate, preseason football is back in our life. Wonderful. I have two grand takeaways. I'm going to hit you with take one. Then we'll get to take two, and then you could kind of piggyback what you want to do here as far as what you saw over these last couple of days. But as I'm in and out, I'm not going to say that I watched every minute of every second of these preseason games. There's only so much you can take. Saw a lot of Giants and Vikings on Saturday. Saw a lot of Broncos and Falcons on Friday. Saw the Steelers being in PA, taking on the Packers on Thursday. Dude, I want to start here. I've talked to a lot of smart people, a lot of sharp people who have tried to convince me that the Atlanta Falcons this year are winning the NFC South. Well, I know it is preseason, and I know I may sound like a jilted lover because Tua was my quarterback. I was his biggest proponent. I was defending him till the cows come home. I'm watching him drop snaps the other day, get bamboozled. He can't move. He can't throw, and you're going to sit there and tell me the Atlanta Falcons are winning the NFC South? Come on. Come on. What are we doing here? If you are going to bet your hard-earned American dollars on that team with that quarterback to go win a division, you're certifiably insane, dude. Certifiably insane. You can't do it.
That is one of my takeaways. Atlanta was a team I thought had some value, plus 425 to win the South, just because some skill guys, some guys on defense, they almost won it last year. And if Tua can just be okay, you got a shot, and you don't need to win 12, 13 games to win that division. You won it last year with, what, eight? And I think Carolina won 8-9 and won that division. That being said, you mentioned Tua did not look good. I've never been a Tua fan, and I think he's just kind of diminished physically. Can't, like you said, can't move, can't throw. It's not a great combination for a quarterback or anybody, really, especially a professional athlete of any kind. And now James Pierce suspended for the first eight games, and Jalon Walker probably out for the year. I think he is out for the year. So that's a lot. I'm with you, Atlanta. That's a rough start to the preseason, and my enthusiasm for them has certainly been tempered. I'll give you a weird one, and it was fun, and there's going to be a little withdrawal today with no football because Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I've sat here and watched a lot of it. It seems like we've had wall-to-wall football really starting with Thursday night, and it's been fun. And JJ here on the East Coast, a little chill in the air. It feels like football. It feels like fall where you wake up this morning, man, I'm a little chilly. I'm a little cool.
I need a hoodie. So. I just got back from a walk a few minutes ago. There was no chill for your boy. So maybe you go a little further north, got a little bit of that fall feel. Yes. I'm sweating my rear end off. I don't know about you, but there's that.
I'll give you two more quick ones. And this is a weird one, but the Green Bay last playoffs, they lost. They got eliminated because they didn't have a kicker. They missed three kicks in a game to Chicago where they led by 20 points. They lost by four. McManus missed two field goals and missed an extra point. 7 points left on the board. They get eliminated. This kid, Trey Smack, what a great kicker name, a great name just in general for a football player, but especially a kicker. Man, he was awesome on Thursday night against the Steelers. 58, 59-yarder. One of them got wiped out because of a penalty, and I know it's different kicking in Chicago or Lambeau in January as opposed to sitting here in August making kicks when it's beautiful out. I get that, but that might be a good development here, and that's something where, man, these kickers, we don't think about them. They don't matter until they do, so that was one takeaway. And look, I know it's the preseason. We have to, you know, label that caveat with all this stuff. Francisco Mendoza, I'd be surprised if he's going to be busted. It looks like they have a quarterback. I don't know if he's going to be a star, but with his work ethic, his demeanor, you know, he's staying away from the strip and everything. Seems like good character, decent enough tools. I'd be surprised if 2-3 years from now the Raiders are looking for another quarterback. I think he's at least probably a top half of the league quarterback. Made some big throws the other night. So impressed with Mendoza, impressed with the Packers kicker. Like you said, the Falcons maybe jump off that bandwagon. Anything else you took away here from these first 2 days?
Yeah, a few more takeaways, but I do want to piggyback on two things you just brought up that I think are brilliant, brilliant points. First being the margin, right, within the NFC North. is going to be so small this season because all four of these teams are really, really good. Detroit, soft schedule, loaded on offense. Chicago, Ben Johnson is telling you they're going to have record-setting offense. They're going to score the most points in league history. And I love me some Caleb Williams and what I saw in the second half of the year. The Vikings, a lot of talent on that roster. Like, all four of those teams had winning records a year ago. Nobody's going to be surprised if that's the case again this year. That's something for Green Bay that could decide making the playoffs or being on the outside looking in. Winning a division or falling short within the division. The kicking game, which was absolutely positively problematic for them. So that's a positive development if indeed they figured it out. That's takeaway number one that you brought up. It's a great, great point. Mendoza, you know who he reminds me of? Let's see if you can take a guess. Yeah, I do. He's a top half quarterback right now in the league.
He's a top half quarterback right now in the league. Man.
Yes.
Plays in the NFC North.
No, not Baker.
It's Love?
It's not Love. Jared Goff.
Okay. All right.
Fernando Mendoza gives me Jared Goff vibes. Which, by the way, if your team is really good, there's nothing wrong with that. Then maybe Mendoza could be a little bit better than that. We shall see. Do you think there's any chance we see him in the first month of the season? Because his situation and where he was drafted would make it rather obvious that, like, for most teams around football, get him out there, want to see him play. But Brady has kind of been on this sort of diatribe that, hey, I don't think he should play at all. I don't like rookies playing the first year. It's such a tough temptation, though, when your team is not any good. All of a sudden, the fans are calling for it. When do you think we see Mendoza?
Usually we do this every year with like a big-time quarterback that sits for a bit, and usually I feel like it's mid-October is that sweet spot where, all right, you give the incumbent, the veteran, the first month. After that, if it's not going well, you get a couple weeks and you reach the point, JJ, where it's like, all right, what are we doing? We're not winning anything this year. Let's let the kid go out there, take his lumps, get some experience, and give him the key. So I don't know, over under, Halloween's too late. October 20th, I would, if I'm making the, if I'm making the odds, now injuries can always make it. He could, Cousins gets hurt in practice or he gets hurt in week one, week two, that's different. Let's just say Cousins is healthy. That's the caveat. I'll go October 20th over under. You going over or under?
History tells us under. It just does. These guys always find a way onto the field. If heaven forbid Kirk Cousins throws three interceptions and they lose week one, the hideous Miami will, then the calls in Vegas are only going to intensify with each and every week with the Chargers at the Saints, Kansas City at the Patriots versus the Bills. To go get Mendoza in there, they actually have some soft games later in the year that would be like your ideal landing spots. Like, I'm trying to find one. I guess you would say at the Jets, but in many cases, well, they like having that rookie quarterback start the first game at home because it's like, hey, a draw, an appeal, it's playing to your fan base. Hey, you're going to get a chance to see Fernando Mendoza's first game in a Raider uniform at home. Not at hideous MetLife Stadium, but yeah, I would take the under on that for sure. Can I tell you something I would take the over on? Missed games at 2.5 for Jackson Dart. And this one that he took Saturday in the preseason game against the Minnesota Vikings, this was not Jackson Dart being a madman. I mean, this was just Tyrone Tracy missing a block and Jackson Dart getting clobbered as a result. Goes into the medical tent. Says he's fine, actually comes back into the game and throws a really nice touchdown to Malachi Fields, the big third-round pick out of Notre Dame. I like Jackson Dart's game. I like his moxie. I like his swagger. Dude, this was a problem a year ago for the Giants. And in one preseason game, he's already now finding his way back to the 10. That's just not an optic that's going to sit well with me.
You like over missed games. I would not disagree. I like over whatever his interceptions are, as long as he plays enough, because man, that touchdown he threw, yeah, the result is good. Nice catch, nice throw. That was a short window. I'm sure you saw the play. There was nobody, there was no space there. If you're going to try to jam balls in like that on the NFL, especially against starters, man, you're going to have some go the other way, because yeah, that was a very dangerous throw, even though, you know, the result being a touchdown is all that matters, and he's going to get credit for that. That was quite a gutsy throw there by Dart, but yeah, just great to have it back. And I feel like this year we've seen it a little bit more. It started to, the pendulum started to swing a little bit more, where for a few years it felt like you didn't see anybody at all. It was rare to see any starting quarterback, any starter at all. Now we've seen some of these guys start to play a little bit more. So all these teams, JJ, I feel like trying to find a balance between, all right, we don't want to get our guys crushed here and we don't want to lose anyone to injury, but we don't want to take the field in September for week one and have it basically be our preseason. So they're trying to walk that line of, let's play these guys a little bit, dip the toe in the water. So it's fun. I think more than a toe in the water, and I'm sure you saw this, Jeremiah Love, 14, and he's going to be really good, which you'd expect when you take a running back that high. 14 touches the other night. What are we doing? Get him in. Get him out. You know what?
Yeah,
three or four touches. Why are we running him into the ground?
I'm losing my mind if I'm a Cardinal fan. I don't need a running back who's going to take enough of a beating throughout a 17-game season, getting 14 touches, and, of course, ending up hurt at the end of the game. It's like, dude, maybe let that happen once we get going. I'm of the McVay belief. I don't want to see my guys a whole lot in the preseason. They have these joint practices. McVay's teams never seem to have a problem starting seasons. They don't start slow. I get the teams that do start slow saying, hey, we got to change this up. Cincinnati and Zach Taylor saying, hey, we've gotten off to rotten starts. We need a different routine. Great. You could subscribe me to that theory. But if John Jastrzemski was a team, we'll go at it for the joint practices. We're not going at it. Sorry, ticket holders. Don't really care if you see second and third stringers. We're just getting started. A lot of preseason takeaways from Will Hill and John Jastrzemski. Plus, full card in baseball. A lot to chew on with this wild card race in the American League. Come right back.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. Visa Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with Visa Pro.
Tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
Week zero. College football is almost here, and with the NFL regular season right behind it, now is the time to get your edge with VSiN Pro. Join VSiN Pro today and get instant access to both our college football and NFL betting guides, packed with team previews, power ratings, and proven betting systems. And best bets from VSiN's top analysts. And that's just the start. You also get daily best bets from VSiN hosts and guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop tools and matchup analysis, plus 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Start today for just $9.99 or save 50% with a VSiN Pro annual subscription. Sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe. That is VSiN.com/subscribe. It's Will Hill and John Jastrzemski right here on the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. We'll have a lot more football takeaways as week one of the NFL preseason has officially concluded. We saw some guys in action. We saw other teams say, not so much. We'll dive into a lot more football over the next couple hours. But I do want to hit on this, Will. It's mid-August in Major League Baseball. And at the moment, the third wild card in the American League, the Texas Rangers would be two games under 500. Let's just look at the insanity at the moment of this AL wild card race. Where, look, the Yankees and the Red Sox are going to be in. They have nice working margins. And then you have the two games under Rangers at 61 and 63. Don't look now. Toronto, after a monstrous week against the Red Sox, winning 3 out of 4 at home, now winning the first two games against the Yankees, beating Cole Friday, beating Schwitler on Saturday, they are a half game out of a playoff spot. Baltimore, after winning the first two games at Tropicana Field, They're a half game out. The Tigers sold Skubal. They're a half game out. Then you got the Twins a game back. The Guardians a game back. The Mariners, just think about this for a second. Well, the Seattle Mariners are 8 games under .500. And to me, are hands down the American League's biggest disappointment. They're 3 games out of a playoff spot. Make it make sense.
Let's look at this from an odds perspective. You tell me who you like, because FanDuel has odds to be the 6th seed. Orioles are plus 650. Blue Jays are plus 460. Mariners are 16 to 1. Twins are 11 to 1. If you think the Red Sox can fall down, which I don't, plus 750. Cleveland's plus 650. Rangers are 8 to 1. Detroit's plus 650. If you think the Yankees, for whatever reason, are going to fall to that, 22 to 1. And we'll throw in the White Sox just because if the White Sox, who have had a nice weekend here and a big weekend, they have stepped up and won 2 games in Detroit, with Detroit breathing down your neck. Those are some gutty wins. The White Sox plus 850, just to be the 6th seed exactly. Again, chop around, maybe find better numbers elsewhere. Of all the numbers I listed, again, I know this is kind of a tallest midget contest where you're trying to figure out which teams you like, because none of us really like all these teams. Who do you like? Any of those numbers jump out to you?
Toronto. And maybe this is due to the fact, Will, that I just have watched them beat the Yankees, and I took them a bunch this week. I was doing the shows with Stormy and with Paulie. Blue Jays were really good to me against the Red Sox. I was all over them. I wish I could say the same in this series against the Yankees. Didn't go anywhere near them, and we'll actually have a thought in best bets for Blue Jays-Yankees a little bit later on. But here's the argument I would make with Toronto. They have kind of survived a gauntlet schedule here. Now, it's still going to be very tough next week. I believe they have a matchup at Fenway Park with the Red Sox. There was another tough series that I was looking at. But then after next week, I know what it is. It's a road trip. It's like the Red Sox, the Yankees. So you got a couple more of these teams in big games. But after that, well, their schedule eases up. They have postseason pedigree. They have a 1-2 punch of Cease and Soriano. And you know, with Varlin, the ninth inning, if you have a lead in these games, you're going to go and win these games. I kind of like Toronto +3 and change. And it's crazy because I didn't like them 2 weeks ago. I probably could talk myself in and out of every single one of these teams. But after what you just presented me and after what I just watched this week, +3 and change for Toronto to be the 6th seed. Dude, I'm in.
+460 at FanDuel. I like Baltimore. It's, you know, you have a lot of competition in Baltimore. They've been hot and cold all year. Every time you think they're about to get going, they lose a few games. I just think there's enough talent on that team. And Rodgers has started to pitch better. I know he was shaky last time out, I think, in Minnesota. But I would take a shot Baltimore plus 650. But again, it's like a 5-6-way coin flip where all these teams have their warts. There's a reason all these teams are under 500. But all these teams have a shot. But Baltimore plus 650 would be the one I take a shot at. Who do you think? It's probably the same answer. Who do you think is the most dangerous if they got in? Or maybe it's not the same answer.
No, it is the same answer to me. Hands down, Toronto.
Okay.
I mean, dude, they were in Game 7 of the World Series last year and outplayed the Dodgers. And they have a good chunk of that exact same team ready to go and rock and roll. Like, I'm sorry. The Minnesota Twins get serious. Texas would be the team that a lot of people would look at because of DeGrom and Nathan Eovaldi. They can't hit at all. I was bullish on the Orioles preseason. I will be more than happy to go and cash it over or a playoff bet for them that I might have made at the beginning of the year. I just think the overall totality of the Blue Jays is better than the Orioles. And adding Soriano and having Cease pitch like this, I know Guerrero is a shell of what he was a year ago. That's totally fair. That's totally true. But look at what the Blue Jays did this week, Will. Red Sox, Yankees, beat them, right? And also, I want to acknowledge this for the listening audience. The 6th seed in the American League is set up for success if they get into the playoffs. What do I mean by that? They don't reseed in baseball. So you know the 4 and the 5 are going to match up, which means more than likely it's going to be the Yankees and the Red Sox. Don't see either team catching the Tampa Bay Rays. Tampa probably wins their division. Yankees and the Red Sox are 4-5. Okay. Whoever comes out of this convoluted mess of an American League wild card, what is their road? It's a 3-game series against the Astros. I would say that's winnable. If they beat Houston, it would be the winner of the American League Central. Like, let's put it this way, Will. If Toronto matches up with Houston, that is a coin flip series, right? Like, if the odds makers were to give me, like, what would the live series price be on Blue Jays, Astros, with three games being played in Houston? What, $1.20 Houston? $1.25 Houston? I don't think it's more than that.
I think you're in the right neighborhood. By the way, 33-1 for Toronto to win the American League. Is that enough for you to pull the trigger?
I would take a flyer on that. And I want to make everybody aware of this. This is a bet that could look insanely stupid in about a week or two if the Blue Jays go to Yankee Stadium and go to Fenway Park and get absolutely destroyed. But what if they hang in? And if they make the – let's put it this way. In this wide-open American League, if Toronto makes the playoffs, well, would you rather have Toronto at 30-something to 1 or the Orioles? I'd rather have Toronto. To me, if they get in, I think they're a way more dangerous team.
Makes sense. And it sounds like you do. You think the White Sox hold on? If I asked you on Friday who wins this division, man, if you asked me, I probably would have said Detroit. I think three games at home, they'll probably have a nice weekend, maybe win 2 out of 3. Who knows, maybe sweep. I'm surprised Detroit, who clawed their way back, they've got the run differential. For them to lose the first two games at home to the White Sox, very impressive for the White Sox, who were starting to leak oil and disappointed. What's your take on the AL Central? Who do you think emerges?
Yeah, I've always felt Chicago would find a way to hold on because they've scored runs consistently all year. And listen, going into this weekend, you're absolutely right. It was set up for the Detroit Tigers to go and make their move. Didn't happen. You see this sometimes. You know what's the analogy I would make, Will? You know when a team in basketball is down like 27 points?
Yes.
20-some points?
Yes, I knew you were going to say that. 100%.
You got to fight so hard. You got to scratch and claw so much to get it within two, to tie the game.
Yes.
But can you go to that next level and go on one more little 6-7-0 spurt to go and win the game? Maybe that's the case with Detroit. The good news for them is, hey, even if they don't win the division, they got a fallback with a wild card. So they got two. Sure. That's the advantage. If you want to get in to make the playoff, miss the playoff market, the teams like Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland, they got two avenues of getting in. Toronto, Baltimore, they got one avenue of getting in. That's it.
Good point. Yeah, it's a good point. So I know once football starts, it's all football all the time, but these races are going to be really good. I can't wait. It's fun. Even though these teams aren't very good, to have a 5-6-way race for the wild card is fun. No.
This is what baseball wanted, and this is what baseball envisioned when they expanded their postseason, that they'd have 10 zillion teams trying to find their way into the postseason. I, for one, don't love the fact that you got 6 or 7 teams that are 2 and 3 games under 500 that are trying to talk themselves into going on runs. But hey, that's the way the cookie crumbles. And I'm going to add that Toronto 37-1 to win the American League right here, right now. We got a lot more to get to. Will Hill, John Jastrzemski. We got the rest of the baseball betting card. And what's the SEC looking like? Coming right back.
You're tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
Football season is almost here, and the sharp money is already moving. Here's how the sharp plays sees it first. Exclusive data feeds from 4 major sportsbooks. There we go. Say that 10 times fast. Thousands of sharp bettors and professional syndicates. Checked in real time before the market moves. All of it filtered and sorted by version 6.0 of their AI model. That's the machine. Okay, now the receipts. Every play log. Every result public, records back to 2011, live logs since 2021. It all feeds a live performance terminal. Check it out anytime, no login, no paywall. Nobody else in the industry runs one because most records couldn't survive it. The sharp plays record gets audited daily by their own haters. No steam chasing, no stale trends, no recycled plays. Follow the sharp money at sharpplays.com. It's Will Hill, John Jastrzemski. on the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. Will, a couple of thoughts here in the court of Major League Baseball, and then we want to break down the odds for what the SEC is going to look like this year. We got a couple of takes, got a couple of thoughts there. Detroit and Chicago. This is a game I am not playing. You mentioned a big weekend already so far for the White Sox. Line opened around 116. Now it's basically down to even money. Thoughts, White Sox, you like them today to go and finish off the sweep?
I don't. I figure, and you'll talk a lot in baseball about motivation because it's not one of those sports where it's not basketball or football where effort matters. I mean, it's not, you know, it's more execution and how your pitcher does. But Anderson against Burke, to me, it's a wash. It's properly priced. I do like, if you've noticed, these books. I think part of it's the prediction market starting to go with more reduced juice because you can get minus 106 on the Tigers. You can get minus 101 on the White Sox. You don't have these 20-cent splits, which is much better, much more favorable to the better. I think Detroit probably gets it done, but I kind of liked them the last two nights, and it didn't work out for me. So I'm not going back to the well a third time. It would be a lean towards Detroit. I don't think the White Sox get the sweep on the road, but I'm not willing to pay to find out. How about you? You have any thoughts or bets on this game?
No, I'm not touching this game. Not touching it because conventional wisdom would say Detroit is going to avoid the sweep. They're not going to get swept at home. Haven't liked what I've seen over the first 2 days. And maybe it's a statement series by a very young, up-and-coming Chicago White Sox team. Now, this next game, I do have a lot of thoughts on. I'm not going to spoil my best bet, which will be coming up later on in the show for the Yankees and the Toronto Blue Jays. This is not a best bet for me, Will, but I'm going to tell you right now, I think it's a good play. You kind of like the under 7.5, right? I mean, my goodness, yes. Both of these teams can't score runs. Dylan Cease is one of the front runners to be the AL Cy Young Award winner. Ryan Weathers, to his credit, over his last four or five starts, has thrown a ball great for the New York Yankees.
Yep.
Did I mention neither one of these teams can score runs? You're seeing over at Circa 7. You could shop around and maybe find yourself a 7.5. I like the under in this game. Well, I can't see any scoring.
I was doing the Saturday night show last night with Brad Taylor. I gave out under 7.5. You're down to 7. I get if the 7 makes you uncomfortable. It's hard to stay under 7 in a baseball game, but I'm not going over because, like you said, Yankees can't hit and they got good pitching. And you follow the Yanks, JJ. You know this. Every time you look up in a Yankee game, it's the 6th inning, it's the 7th inning, it's 1-0, it's 1-1. Those Atlanta games were scoreless going into the 6th, 7th inning a couple times. This past week, and they had that one game, I think it was Wednesday night against Seattle, where their offense exploded and they gave up some runs. But for the most part, it's very hard to get runs across. They don't have much offense, and they have good pitching. So it would still be under 7 or nothing for me, but I get, you know, with the number coming down here, that's not much margin for error. But, man, that's a broken offense right now. I know they got some reinforcements coming at some point. Judge playing catch, Stanton, I mean, who knows? He's running the bases. They'll show him a baseball. They'll let him touch a baseball. Eventually, he swings a bat. It's ridiculous. The little baby steps with Stanton and Bellinger. That's a lot of offense on the shelf. But, man, guys like Chisholm, you know, he's played terribly. Rice is cooled off. And
he should be benched.
Every time you watch the Yanks.
Can we acknowledge that?
Yeah, well, I know.
He should not be playing every day for the Yankees. Sorry, I don't care if you're
not my guy. Not my favorite guy.
You stink. Proclaiming you're going to go 50-50 at the beginning of the year. Now you got an OPS that's like under 680, and you give non-competitive at bat after non-competitive at bat. I would play Caballero at second base. That would be my move if I ran the team. But, well, they don't allow me to run the team. This is the best Yankee pitching they've had since like the early 2000s. And that includes the 09 team. That's how good I think the Yankee pitching is. Loaded. It's a shame the offense is letting it go to waste. Total shame.
If they got Judge back and they got everyone healthy, they have the most talented team, but you're going to have to go the best of three route. I don't think they're catching Tampa, and that best of three could be very dangerous. It's dangerous against anybody, but especially Boston. We'll see where that series is, but it's like you said, it's a loaded pitching staff, but they certainly have their obstacles with the injuries, the best two out of three in the wild card, and we'll see when they get these guys back. That's the big question. It's hard to answer, and it's hard to kind of forecast where the Yankees are going to go here when you don't know if and when Judge are going to be back. Sounds like he will be back, but September 8th, September 18th, is he 100% when he's back? Those are all questions that it's really hard to answer without seeing him play, without having him swing a bat here.
Here's another one. Baltimore, trying to get the sweep. You mentioned you like them maybe to go and get that 6th seed within the American League. Peralta, I got to take an L on this. Well, I thought he'd go to Tampa and turn himself around immediately. That has not happened. He has basically looked like the same Freddy Peralta we saw for 3+ months with the New York Mets, who was a below average big league starter. I know there might be some juice involved because, hey, Tampa's been great at home all year. They're not going to get swept. I don't see it. I think Baltimore is live in the game. You mentioned Rodgers throwing the ball better. I think this series means a heck of a lot more to the Orioles. And I expect the public to be all over the Rays. No, they're not going to get swept. Oh, come on. The Orioles aren't going to win 3 games at Tropicana Field. I kind of think they do. I like Baltimore in this spot. Am I crazy?
Not crazy at all. I'm going to bet this. Orioles getting half a run in the first five, minus 135, where, you know what? If we're tied after five, I cash my ticket. As soon as the national anthem ends, I'm already winning my bet. You got to score an extra run to beat me. I think I got the better pitcher. Now, Peralta, I'm with you. I figure Tampa probably straighten him out at some point, maybe pitch usage, mechanics, whatever it is. He has had to pitch his two starts at Coors and at, you know, whatever that ballpark is in Sacramento, basically like pitching on the moon. So maybe you give him a little bit of a break there. Maybe a couple weeks in the Rays lab, they start to tinker with some things with the pitch mix, with his mechanics, and eventually he gets straightened out. But until you see it, it's hard to believe it. So I'll take that half run in the first five with Rodgers and the Orioles.
An NLCS rematch. I can tell you, I've been on the Milwaukee Brewers every game in this 4-game series. I took them Thursday, miracle. Took them Friday, took a shot with Yamamoto, not so lucky. Yesterday, stacked it, took them with the Miz. Very rare to have a situation where Milwaukee is like favorites against it, or the Dodgers are like, you know, even underdogs. It's like so bizarre living in that world. What did that line close at yesterday? You were doing a show, Milwaukee and LA. Do you remember?
Dodgers plus 108, plus 110, something like that.
So weird. Like, so weird. That said, I faded it because I said, bigger series for Milwaukee. Mizorowski going to be up for the challenge. Now, Scooble on the mound. You're going to have to pay a premium. I don't have this on the best bet card, but like I look at this matchup and I'm very enticed to say I want to grab 160 with Milwaukee.
I'm passing here. I mean, I get why the Dodgers are favored. The Dodgers have their issues right now. Diaz, can you give that guy the ball?
He's a problem.
Come playoff time, I don't know how you can.
Huge problem.
Major issue.
They
got to
straighten him out fast, Will. That's why Roberts is not taking him out of the closer's role. People are like, oh, well, why is he staying in the closer's role? Because the Dodgers are like, we're going to the playoffs anyway. People are like, oh, well, if you might end up as the 3 seed. Dave Roberts is going to say, I don't care. I was the 3 seed last year, and I ended up going and winning the World Series. I need to get Edwin Diaz right if I'm going to go and win this thing. And you know this, and I know this. The guy, when he's right, is like one of, if not the most electrifying closers in all baseball. Sure. I just can't believe how bad he's been. It's been atrocious.
Yeah, but closers like your kicker, man. You can't. It's hard to get that guy straightened out on the fly. If your shortstop is slumping, your left field is slumping, you just kind of let him go through it. When your kicker's slumping, he costs you games. When your closer's slumping, he turns wins into losses. And Robert's other answer, and you're totally right, he doesn't care about the best 2 out of 3, but that's a dangerous series. His other answer, and it's a fair one, who do you want me to put in the ninth? I don't have any better options, so I'm just going to let this guy. We gave him a lot of money. He's got the pedigree. We're going to see if he can work his way out of it. I'll throw one at you. We mentioned the seeding. Dodgers to be the 3 seed, plus 700. Is that enough for you? And that's at FanDuel. I just want to make sure this is updated. Yeah, plus 700 for the Dodgers to be the 3 seed. Is that a bet for you?
It's not a bet, but I'm enticed. You know, the problem is I'd have to look at the Dodgers' schedule in September. Do they have a bunch of cupcake games with, like, the Rockies and the Giants that could allow them to just coast into, like, the 1 or the 2 seed? But that's a fascinating race because – unlike last year, where Cincinnati was a first-round bye for the Dodgers, Philadelphia Phillies at a 6 seed.
Yes.
Wheeler, Sanchez, Lizardo, anything but a first-round bye. We'll get to the SEC. College football on the horizon. How do we break down this conference? We'll dive into that coming up next.
VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
We're closing in on the end of hour one. It is the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. Will Hill alongside Josh Yastrzemski. And Will, believe it or not, week zero, college football. Getting closer and closer, man. Do you, first things first here, before we dive into the SEC, do you like the week zero concept? Because I get the argument, hey, it's football. It's good to have football back. To me, there's something about like Labor Day weekend being the start of college football.
I
for one, don't need week zero. That's just me. I don't need it.
It's odd, but you know what? I'm never going to say no to football. It's like a little bit of an appetizer, but it's a weird appetizer. I liked it better when it would come sooner, where it's like, all right, Labor Day weekend, everything's just pushed back a few days, it seems like. So usually this week zero is like August 22nd or 23rd, and then Labor Day weekend's the last couple of days of August. Everything, August 29th being week zero and Labor Day weekend not being until a week into September is a lot. But I'm never going to say no to football, but I get your point. It's a weird start to it. Not sure when they started doing this or why they started doing this. It's always weird to have just these five or six games. The games this year aren't awful. You get TCU, UNC. You get, USC plays, although they're like a 40-point favorite. UNLV, Memphis is a nice little, mid-major type of game with where both teams are decent. So I'm never going to I'm not going to say no to it. I'm not going to complain about it. So I'm more for than against, but I get your point for sure.
Fair enough. I get it. Action's action. It's just premature action as far as I'm concerned. Let me hit you with this. We got the odds to win the SEC championship this year. These are on DraftKings. Georgia, Texas, no surprise, 1-2. Georgia the favorite at plus 260. Then Arch Manning and Sark's Texas Longhorns a little north at 3-1. Bama and LSU, 3-4. Don't agree with that. Bama's at 8-1. LSU's at 9-1. Then you got two dangerous teams, in my opinion. Oklahoma at 11-1. Ole Miss a little south of 12-1. A&M's at 12-1, Tennessee's at 17-1, and then you have a serious drop-off with Florida, Missouri, Auburn at 26, 33, 43, respectively. Now, if I tell you, Will Hill, you got to bet somebody other than Georgia or Texas to go and win the SEC, who's the school? Is it because of price? Is it because of team? Is it because of both? What's the play?
I will say, I know this doesn't answer your question. I did already bet Georgia. I've been giving out Georgia all summer. I think the schedule favors them. A lot of returning talent, including their quarterback. And they're kind of being slept on a little bit, which you usually wouldn't say about Georgia. But to answer your question, if I can't pick Georgia, I can't pick Texas. I'll go Oklahoma because I got a quarterback that's projected to go in the first round. I know Mateer did not play well at the end of last year. Broken hand, broken fingers, whatever it was. And that really affected him, even though he said he was fine at the time. We know he wasn't. And his play revealed that. And he got a defense. He got maybe a top three, top five defense in the country. So if I've got a defense and I've got a first-round quarterback, I know the schedule's tough. Maybe over 7.5 wins, even paying some juice is the better way to play it. But Oklahoma, I think, has the upside because of the QB and the defense. But, again, I think it's Georgia just from a value standpoint. It, numbers come down. This was plus 325. We were doing it earlier in the summer. They avoid LSU, Texas, Texas A&M, Tennessee. They get two really tough, and they get Oklahoma at home. Two really tough games at Bama, at Ole Miss. They're going to be favored in every game. If you can split those, be a one-loss SEC team going into the title game, you're going to be favored. So the numbers come down. I'm not sure how much lower I'd play it than plus 260, but Georgia is my pick here. I think they're in good shape to get back to the SEC title game.
No arguments with Georgia. I like them more than Texas going into the year. I think they deserve to be favorites. I think the odds makers have that right. I'm intrigued by Oklahoma because of everything you just mentioned. You got a guy who, for what, the first 6 weeks of the year looked like he had a chance in Mateer to go and be a Heisman Trophy winner. Not that he was going to win the award, but he was in the conversation, like you at least entertained the thought. And the defense, it's so – well, isn't it weird talking about Oklahoma and defense in the same sentence? I don't know. Like, that just is – for all the years of being in the Big 12, when it had Lincoln Riley, when defense was very much optional for that program, now to see Oklahoma with a legitimate defense, it still kind of throws me for a little bit of a loop. So I get the logic there. The other one I would throw out is Ole Miss because I love the quarterback that much. But it's interesting. Neither one of us want to get in the business of backing Bama or backing LSU. Are we almost seeing both of those programs priced the way that they are because of the pedigree of their names, because it is Bama, because it is LSU? Is that why you see it? Like, I almost feel like Bama should be right where, like, Oklahoma. I like Oklahoma more than I like Alabama this year. I do, and I know Alabama beat them in the playoff last year. I get that. Maybe it's the saltiness, Will, of me coming out because I thought I was counting my money when Oklahoma was up like 17-0 in that game. I'm still absolutely disgusted I lost that bet in the college football playoff. But I don't agree with the odds makers having LSU and Bama ahead of Oklahoma. I don't agree.
Back and forth on Bama. I think there's still a lot of talent there. We'll see what they get that out of the quarterback position. And DeBoer was such like a home run hire when they got him. And it's always tough replacing these legends, but he had beaten Lanning head-to-head. He'd beaten so many guys as an underdog. It looked like the perfect hire. And it's not like it's gone poorly. He made the playoffs and won a game last year. For most schools, that's a hell of a year. But Alabama's not most schools. And we know that the playing field has been leveled here. Everyone gets players. So it's not just, hey, we're Bama, we got Saban, and we're going to get our pick of the litter. The talent is much more spread out, so it's much more challenging. I don't have any bets on Bama. Your points are well taken. I don't buy LSU. Look, I know Lane Kiffin, all the money, all the controversy about should he coach, would he coach Ole Miss in the playoffs, all that stuff. Boy, guy gets a lot of love and a lot of attention. What has he ever won? Okay, they made the playoffs last year. I thought 2 years ago the team with Dart and all those defenders that got drafted high was probably more talented. That team was loaded and somehow missed the playoffs, lost games they shouldn't have. He just has a habit of underachieving when he's got the most talent. I'm not sold on Lane Kiffin as this elite A-plus big-time coach if you want to win a championship. He can get the players. He's fun with the media. You know, he likes to joke around. He's a magnet for attention, all of that stuff. And I get why LSU hired him. But to me, like this idea that you hire Lane Kiffin and just, you know, you're going to pencil yourself into national championship games for the next decade or so, I'm not buying it. He really has not won much to match all the accolades and all the attention he receives.
I totally agree with that. I'm not a Lane Kiffin fan as well. And I will be rooting like crazy for Ole Miss to go and beat him when they match up in a couple of weeks. Can I hit you with the Alabama schedule? Because over at DraftKings, their win total is at 8.5, which seems pretty low for Alabama. Are we getting a 9 here? And I know our guy PJ is very much waiting with bated breath as Roll we tide. Do this little exercise because he's an Alabama guy. Here we go. East Carolina at Kentucky, home Florida State, home South Carolina, at Miss State, Georgia. Other than the Georgia game, they win all of those games that we're listing?
Yes.
Okay. At Tennessee, tricky.
Yes, it is tricky. At LSU is tricky. A&M at home is not easy. I'm more 9-8. I mean, I don't know that I want to. It is. Again, I don't know when we talk about this stuff. It's like, you know what? For the sake of the exercise and for the sake of the content, would you go over or under? I'd go over from a real life betting standpoint. I'm making this bet mid-August. If I win, I'm not cashing it till December. Do I have enough of an edge where I'm actually going to make this bet and go over 8.5? Probably not. But if I had to bet it, I think they're more 9 than 8.
I would agree with that. But with that schedule, Will, what am I missing? I feel like it should be a win higher. Maybe I'm underselling that stretch at Tennessee, A&M, and LSU, which to me is tricky. But like the back half, it's at Vandy, Chattanooga, Auburn. I know it's a rivalry game with Auburn, the Iron Bowl, but that should be 9 wins for Alabama. Should be.
I'm with you. I like 9. I like 9 more than 8. I'm with you.
And I wouldn't bet him as far as futures to win a championship in the SEC is, or, you know, the college football playoff or whatever, but they should get the 9 wins. Speaking of making the playoff, any of these interest you? Bama plus 154, A&M plus 154, LSU plus 160, Oklahoma, Ole Miss 210, 220, and then Tennessee at plus 380. You want to take a flyer on any of those or no?
I'd like a little more on Oklahoma because the schedule's not easy, but everything I mentioned about the quarterback and the defense, and I'm getting over 2-1, that would be the one I think has some value with the Sooners there.
I think the Sooners are a team that you and I might end up being invested in. Win total, super, super low, because as you alluded to, very, very tough schedule for Oklahoma, but really good defense. The quarterback could stay on the field, which is a huge if. And I also think that's a part of the calculus too with Oklahoma. That could be a very, very dangerous team. All right, we got 1 hour down, two loaded hours coming your way. We are going to dive into what the NFC West looks like, where you have three win totals north of 10, and you have one that's sitting there at 3.5. Connor Allen, who hosts the Move the Line podcast, he's into the betting aspect of this. He might have some takes for offensive and defensive rookie of the year. We'll throw out one that somebody had thrown his way. That would be music to my ears. May have to tell the audience about that one, Will. That's coming up. Loaded. Hour two with Will and JJ right after this.